This is a joint meeting of the Van Ness South Tenants Association and ANC 3F held October 13, 2016 in the community room of the 3003 Van Ness building. Approximately 80 people were in attendance.
We have a sound system. It's not ideal, but we're going to try to project. Please let us know if we're not quite reaching the back of the room. How's this? It's about as good as I can do. So welcome to this joint event by the Van Ness South Tenants Association and ANC 3F community meeting, which is not only the Van Ness South Tenants Association, but also people in the community. We're going to be talking tonight about the so-called rent concession situation, where many people in rent-controlled buildings find that their landlords, in this case Equity Residential, are raising rents that far exceed what is allowed by law, which is 2% plus the CPI. In any case, we'll have a chance to talk more about the details and to give you a chance to say a little bit about your experience to Councilmember Che. But first, let me say, Shirley Adelstein from ANC 3F, she's our commissioner. Oh, now we have volume. Shirley, there we go. Shirley initiated this meeting. She's been a great representative for us and is very, very active on this issue. And I'm going to let her say a couple things.
Hi, welcome everyone. I'm really glad to see a lot of folks I know, also a lot of folks I hope to get to know. I would like to welcome Councilmember Che to our building, to our district. We are so grateful to have you here tonight. It's fitting that we are having this meeting tonight in this building because recently a Washington City paper article actually featured this building and some of the rent control abuses related to concessions that were going on. For me, this issue is personal because, like many of you, I have had to deal with it. Last month, I got a letter indicating that my rent would be increasing by $1,000. I know many of you have gotten letters like that. Ultimately, I negotiated an increase that was quite a bit above the legal maximum. But this is about a lot more than just individual stories, and certainly about a lot more than my story. Rent control policy in DC is about creating access to affordable housing and stabilized rents. And the kinds of practices that we've seen in this building, elsewhere in Ward 3, and throughout the city, just undermine those goals. So I want to thank you all again for being here tonight, and say again that I'm very grateful to Councilmember Che for her leadership on this issue.
Good evening, everybody. I'm glad they're letting me sit down. I have to confess, I had a flu shot and a pneumonia shot today, and somehow I think it gave me the flu or something. I'm grateful, so forgive me for not standing up. The issue about rent concessions, the idea that you can get a concession on your rent, and then when the first anniversary comes along, you're told that, well, we could charge you, let's say it was $1,000 a month, and we're going to give you a concession of $500. Then on the first anniversary, you're told, well, you know what? It's really still $1,000 a month, so the increase in your rent is going to be based on that. The bill that I introduce basically says that the increase that would be permissible is on your actual rent, not this created rent through these quote-unquote concessions. And the... I had a conversation, I was called today by a Brian Grant from Equitable Properties, and I talked to him about this practice, and I said, well, you know, give me your best shot. Why shouldn't I do this? Why is this bad? Why is what you're doing good? And I'm hard-pressed to say what the arguments were, but they were unconvincing. In addition, I said, you know what? He was saying, well, you know, we're allowed to charge up to that amount, and then when we do have the increase on the actual, not the actual rent, the rent that we would have been able to charge, that's just a negotiating posture for the rent increase. Like you were saying, that you negotiate, you went and talked about it, right? But I said that's extremely unfair. It looks as though you're negotiating, but it it's kind of cheating, because if it's on the rent that you actually pay, there would be no negotiation. And some of the arguments that he gave me really had to do with buildings that are not rent controlled. There's a reason why we have rent control. It's to try to keep the apartments affordable. And so in terms of this particular legislation, I introduced it so that landlords could only charge in a rent-controlled apartment the amount allowed on the actual rent that you pay. Now, when you introduce legislation, as I often tell people, it's the beginning of the conversation, not the end. There was a tenant association meeting, and people had some suggestions about what to do, and so it may not emerge as it is now. For example, there was a discussion about whether rent concessions, quote unquote, should be just eliminate them. And there was also some discussion about, well, what if you have hardship rent concessions? Might there not be a sliver of opportunity to actually have concessions? Let's say, for example, in an apartment, somebody's been there a long time. We're not talking about a person coming in and they're given a concession and then, you know, the rent is increased later on the allowed amount. But somebody has been there a long time, but maybe they suffer some adverse consequence. And a landlord, typically not these kind of distant, you know, corporate landlords, but let's say in a different kind of building, wanted to say to that tenant, you know, I know you've had these reverses and, you know, you're recovering from them. So I'll tell you what, for next year, I'll continue your rent at a lower level because, you know, you're a valued tenant and that sort of thing, a true kind of rent concession. But in any case, the bill would have to go through a hearing. I hope you all, if you're willing, would testify on it and say what you think the law ought to be. I'm sort of your instrument, okay? I'm trying to fix the problem and make it make sense for you. There's also a very serious problem of transparency. When you have these forms and they come to you and they say, your rent is, and they have this outlandish number, and then, you know, you go in and you try to negotiate it down. What you have to, I asked this fellow, I said, well, he said, well, you know, we tell people what the situation is. I said, do you tell them at the front door? So you can all tell me what your experience is. Do you tell them at the front door when somebody comes in to rent an apartment that, okay, you're going to give them this, I could charge you X, but I'm going to give you this concession, you only have to pay Y? Do you say, you know what, on your first anniversary, this is going to jump way up to what I think the legal rent is going to be? He claimed that they tell you that.
No, they don't.
I didn't think so. I said, you know, I'm a little skeptical of that, but you know what? I'll ask the folks tonight. In any case, so I have this bill. I'd like to improve it, and however people suggest we should improve it, because, you know, I want to solve the problem. And I'll tell you something else, too, about landlord-tenant issues. In the time I've been on the council, you know, I've never been on the housing committee, but nevertheless, I stick my nose in things all the time. It's like whack-a-mole with the landlords, okay? We fix something, and then they find some other avenue, you know, to get money, to make more money. So I also have no illusions about the fact that there'll be something next year or the year after that, even if we pass this in the most pristine form. So what I also want to encourage you to do is to be kind of an alert and active tenant group, because it's nonstop. You got to watch them every step of the way. In any case, so I just want to bring you up to date on where I am, and I don't know how you want to... What do you want to do?
People up for questions. And
okay.
You a chance to ask them questions.
Okay. Well, I would like to hear what your actual experiences are when you first came to rent, and what you were told, and whether what I was told is accurate or not.
And I'll let you keep the microphone, and I'll try to steer it. As people know, in these meetings, we usually say the meeting's an hour. Maybe we'll have a couple more minutes for this meeting, but in any case, to keep it moving along, please try to keep your comments very short, a minute, maybe 2 minutes, and then we'll give the council member a chance to ask you a question if she has a question specifically, and I'll try to move things along. But as you say to begin with, part of the issue is the bait and switch. You come for one price and there's another price. Hands, how many people had that? Okay, Can someone tell the story of the bait and switch? Do we have someone who can tell that? Okay, a woman in Georgetown Hoyas. Yep.
I teach at GW, so I'm going to have a harsh attitude today.
Okay. Can you hear me? Great. My name is Colleen Cicchetti, and recently moved into a one-bedroom in the South Tower. And when we moved in, when we started looking, we were told you have these array of apartments that are anywhere between 1950 for a one-bedroom to like 2000 approximately. And we're like, great, we found an awesome one we liked. It was 1975. It worked with our move-in date. And it wasn't until we were signing the lease papers and we were going through it that we were told that the actual list price was maybe 36. And then that we were given this huge concession, and it was a great thing on their part. We would still only be charged $19.75. I made her repeat it over and over and again that was all that would show up. But it wasn't until the month before we were supposed to move, there was no other option. Like, this is what we had found, and we were told that was the actual price of the apartment. And she couldn't tell us where that number actually came from.
So you never even got the concession?
We did get the concession, yeah. We still paid $19.75, but she told us that this was a price based on comparable real estate in the area. And I could tell her, I looked at about every building in the area, and that was untrue. So I still don't know where the 36 came from, but we did get the concession.
So tell me what happened on the first anniversary, because, again, this fellow told me, no, it's all very open, and when you rented initially, they told you on the first anniversary they're going to go back to that legal rent or something like that. So you knew what was coming. Is that true?
I know what is going to come. This is our first year in the apartment, but I have tons of friends who live in the building, and they're going through the problem where suddenly they have to pay a lot.
I think is your question, did you know at that time?
The question is when you first rented.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
All right. Just quickly. I think the problem is when the council eliminated the rent ceilings in the 2006 legislation, they didn't eliminate the numbers that they called rent on the records. There's a whole bunch of apartments that have these stupid, ridiculous numbers like hers that aren't the rent. And I think, because I'm trying to think, where do they come up with these numbers? Nobody pays those rents. They're not market rents. And I think if we do the research, what rent ceilings were much above the actual rent. When the council passed the 2006 legislation, I don't believe they required the landlords to tear up the records. They just whited out the word ceiling and kept it on their records as rents.
So they just laid upon the existing program whatever rents were under
called rent ceilings.
At the time,
and they called, now they say.
I was not on the council in 2006, I'm not at fault.
Because I've seen these records, I practice in the landlord, and they come in and they say, well, somebody who has a lease for $1,800, the rent is $4,000. Well, it's not $4,000.
So give me a suggestion. What should we do going forward?
Well, I think all those records need to be eliminated.
Yeah, but there has to be some sort of base, right?
Well, the base is what you actually pay. I mean, what I learned in law school is my rent is what I pay.
Well, that was a long time ago. But,
that's true. But as far as I know, the common law still applies.
Yeah, but going forward, let's say there's an apartment.
Right.
Okay, and the landlord wants to rent it. What we just go for the market rate at that time, because then that frustrates.
Well, you need some basis.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Right, and the market rate. I mean, when rent control came in 85, all the landlords were required to submit a filing that said these are our rents, and then that became the foundation of all rent increases. Now it seems like we don't have that. And so
maybe we could do that again. In other
words,
we could say, as of a certain date,
these are the rents.
Right. You have to tell us what the apartments in your complex rent for.
Exactly.
And that becomes the that's what I mean.
The actual rent.
Right. The actual rent that people are paying for these units.
That's right.
And that would become the baseline.
That becomes the baseline. Now, if you have vacancies when people move out, you could provide for some allowance for that. But this isn't something that a tenant who comes in and is told, well, the rent, whatever that is supposed to mean, is some number that they can never collect, but we're going to create this contractual bypass of rent control. That's what they're doing.
I'd like to interrupt for a minute. Brian is very knowledgeable about this, and he could use the entire time here, but I want to give a few other people. But back to the question that Councilmember Che is probing on, it's about the bait and switch. So when you come to rent an apartment, do they tell you that the actual rent that they're putting down is $1,000 or $1,500 higher than what you're going to pay, right here?
So when we moved in about a year and a half ago,
there had been signs in the elevator at the time we were looking at the building. It was Tenants Association signs about meetings of this sort, that there were concerns about these rent concessions. So we asked about it during the walkthrough, but of course at that point you're just looking at the apartment and they said, oh, don't worry about it. We just have, you know, Tenants Association, they're doing whatever, and it's like, okay, whatever. At the time we went to sign the lease was the first time we also saw or heard about in any way this larger number. And I actually asked him, what is the difference between this number and the other number? What's going to happen when we renew the lease? Is this a number that's going to come back? Like, what is this going to mean for us? And he was like, oh, no, in a year, we'll definitely give you another concession. It's always around exactly the same number. You don't have to worry anything about it. And again, at that point, I was concerned, but you're kind of stuck in a lurch because you've already given notice on your other place, and this is the place you have, so you have to sign it at that point or you have nowhere to live.
Well, speaking about being stuck in a lurch, one of the things I raised with this fellow, and by the way, let me say, this would be a fun meeting. His name is Brian Grant, as I said, Equity Properties, and he said that he would be happy to meet with all of you tenants.
Is he in Chicago?
No, here. So, having said that, we'll get you his contact number and stuff like that, and I just want to be in the back of the room and enjoy the vibe that's created. I want to add that we've been joined by Joel Cohen. He's the attorney with the Office of the Tenant Advocate, who's straight in my eyesight. He's your buddy.
I think people know Joel because he's been to three other meetings here. Joel spends a lot of time with
us. And then about being caught in the lurch, one of the things I brought up with him, I said, well, you know, okay, you say that you disclose at the outset, but then you know what happens? You come on your year anniversary, and they say, well, we could charge you this higher amount, but, you know, we'll offer you this. What kind of negotiating posture do you really have? None, because you're already in the apartment, and it looks like they're saying we could charge you this much, but, you know, you're really lucky, we're only going to charge you this much. And I said, you know, that strikes me as rather unfair, and so we talked about that a little bit. But in any case, if you were stuck at that point, think about how stuck you are now, so to speak, and other folks here too.
We have a direct follow-up on that. Woman in the gray. Yep.
When I signed, just as an aside, when I signed my lease, they told me that they can't jack up the rents at the end of the first year because this building is under rent control.
And please state your name, anyone who is speaking. Thank you.
Hi, so my name is Emma Panisi, and this is our second year in the building. So like others have said, when we first came in, when we went to sign the lease, that was the first notice of the concession. The way it's advertised online, when they send you an email saying this is what the quote is on this day, it's the number that sounds somewhat more reasonable. So we went to sign the lease, and like this is our second apartment, so to be fair, we're probably not that familiar with the sorts of tricks that might be pulled on you. So we didn't examine it that carefully. But when it came to the second year, we probably just had the worst timing in the world, because when they delivered our notice of our rent increase, we were away out of town getting married. And so when we came back from, thank you. When we came back from getting married, we were beyond the 60 days that we had before, that we have to provide notice that we're moving out. So the way that our lease was structured, you have to provide 60 days notice that you're moving out to not get penalized on your lease. So we were at a point where if we were going to move out of the building, we were going to be stuck with a period of time that we were paying the $3,000 a month or whatever, $3,600 a month rate. And there was, we also went in to negotiate, like you said, to kind of examine what the options were. And they said, it says on the piece of paper here that you could have come in and talked to us, but we're past the 60 days now. So you can tell us if you want to move out, but you're going to have to pay the increase. And there was no indication on the piece of paper that they mailed us that was the cutoff, that you only have 60 days. So that's just another loophole that I might be conscientious of, is the amount of time you have to give notice, because we ended up staying, we ended up negotiating a slightly lower rate, but it was still a situation where we were stuck in a lurch because of the timing.
You know, under the common law, and you're well familiar with this, but just to nail it down, one of the pieces of legislation that I introduced would say that if somebody moves out, they break the lease, that, there is an obligation, and in this market, I assume that there would be someone to take the apartment, that they have to rent the apartment and mitigate damages. They can't just let it, what?
I said yes.
Yes. He agrees. In any case, so just if anybody gets stuck, you know, there are options, I'm just adding that as an additional point, because, again, every time there's not something explicit and detailed and responsive to actions by the landlord, they exploit it. It's like they view it as the tax code. Like Donald Trump used, no, I don't mean. But I want you to know that there would be that out. I mean, you don't want to be left with that, right? But still.
Thanks, Justin and Emma. The woman in the leopard skin, did you have a question? I thought I saw your hand before. Okay, one sec. Yes. Right in front of you, Dave.
Hi, good evening. My name is Amelia Blair. I live in West 725. Thank you, Councilwoman Shea, for recognizing I had a question. But in all seriousness, for example, when I received my concession notice, it said that my rent would go up $50, so I didn't pay any attention to it. And then when you start doing the math and you go back and forth with the person, he says, well, it is what it is. Well, first of all, what is a concession? Because it seems kind of arbitrary. And then his cold response to me is, well, you know what, you can just go to a month to month. And then what I did not appreciate on top of that, not only is he the person who's the conduit for our concessions or renewing our leases, but then you also live here in the building too. So I'm sure you probably do receive some benefit, not only because you're an employee. So what kind of concessions were you giving, were you giving yourself? And the one advocate that we did have, it just seemed like they kind of gave him the back door. The one who was encouraging us to negotiate and keep that channel. But what he says as far as, well, we can negotiate, it's not true. It's simply what this couple just stated. They don't give you a window. You just don't know, and it's ridiculous. So I was paying initially $15.95, what I thought would be a $50 increase after these random concessions. I think I'm up, another $200. And then you discuss it after a later point, and they're like, well, you should be thankful you're paying that, because now it goes for $2,300 a month. And like, the attorney was saying, where are these numbers coming from? And I've said it openly, and they know me. I'm like, well, I can move up the street, downtown Bethesda, same kind of amenities for $1,200.
Don't you go to Bethesda.
let's just be a little bit, realistic here for the similar quality of life. But for them to say that, but like I said, that really kind of got under my skin. How dare you live here and receive some sort of benefit, but you're not willing to provide that same kind of openness to. And unfortunately, he's no longer here. He's moved to another property.
he went to Bethesda?
No. He actually went up to the New Jersey market to be a community manager. So, yeah, Marco.
Let's give a few other people a chance to speak. But I should say, with your $1,600 rent, if you turned over this year, 2% is the maximum amount, so it would have been $32. Should be about $1,632 minus 5. So you got I was going to say screwed. Can I say that? I guess so.
Really screwed. No, you know what? I don't want to put upon you, Joel, but in these kind of circumstances, I mean, what can the Office of Tenant Advocate do to help out? In other words, you know, you can pick off people one at a time, and it's hard for them maybe to fight back, but is there some latitude to have class action or something like that?
Well, so I'm sure, I'm sorry for coming late, but I'm sure you've already discussed the legislation, thanks to Councilmember Shea for introducing it. But as I'm sure has also been mentioned,
is that better?
I was just thanking Councilmember Che for her excellent legislative introduction on the issue. But at OTA, we continue to make the argument in court that at the Office of Administrative Hearings that the rent concession practices, some of them are illegal. So I would, is that better? I'm still not coming across. So absolutely come to our office. We'll have you talk to an attorney advisor. Not all rent concession cases are identical, not even in this building. So there are different issues that can be raised. But I would say, yes, organizing is good. If the tenant association can get together, and I think Harry and I have certainly talked about that, get a sufficient number of cases together, there is the possibility of the tenant association filing a petition on behalf of the members of the association for whoever wants to join. So, yes, we will help you file an action challenging the rent concession practices under the current law as well.
All in favor of that? Here we go.
Does that answer the question, or is there a more specific question?
No, I wanted to see if there's some avenue for the folks here to go through the Office of the Tenant Advocate and maybe seek relief that way. This, you know, you pass a piece of legislation, you introduce it, you have to have a hearing, you have to have votes, it has to go through. You know, maybe it's time to have a two-track strategy.
Right. So just so everybody knows, we are, as I talked with Harry and Gabe and a number of residents about, we are currently, right now, talking to tenants and helping them draft tenant petitions to be filed challenging these practices.
In this building?
In this building, absolutely, yes. And there's
how would they join? How would people who are interested in pursuing this also, how would they...
So the OTA, our office is at the Reeves Building. We're at 14th and U Street, Northwest, in Suite 300 North. We have walk-in hours between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. It's an easy proposition. Come in at your convenience. We will set you up with, for this issue, an attorney advisor. We also have non-attorney case managers, but for this issue, a little more complicated. And
can I ask, yes.
To make things easier for people, would you ever send out an attorney advisor to the building?
Yeah.
And then you sit here and people come as they want?
Yeah, and we have done that. It's been a couple of years with a previous attorney advisor. Yes, that's definitely possible.
I'd like to clarify what Joel is saying, because I'm going through it right now. There are two courts that have jurisdiction here. One is the Landlord and Tenant Court, and that's really should be called the Landlord and Landlord Court, because it's set up for the landlords to get money from you. Equity Residential will sue you in Landlord and Tenant Court. They sued me. I dared them to sue me. They called my bluff. They did sue me. But you can also, and I'm happy to be sued in this case because I'm being sued for all of you. On the other hand, there is the Office of Administrative Hearings, and that's what Joel was talking about, which is like small claims court. And in fact, with OAH, you can go, it's much less formal, and it's made to give tenants a chance to say their piece. The thing that's complicated in that, maybe Joel can say, is that there have been a couple of precedents, and this is not a precedent-setting court, but there have been a couple of cases where tenants have lost, And that's the complication. Personally, I think that I and Gabe, who has a case before the court, are going to win because of all the things that people say here. But there are two precedents. Joel, do you want to add to that?
Well, just so to be clear, so landlord and tenant court is not, as Harry knows, it's not an avenue to challenge a rent increase under the rent control law. So that's you would be a defendant in landlord and tenant court. You'd be hauled in because you're not paying rent. And then there'd be a Drayton stay, which means that the L&T court would defer to OAH as the court of primary jurisdiction over the rent amount. So that's the OTA never advises not paying rent, but that's a way to go. You'd have to probably escrow the difference into an escrow fund at L&T.
I'd like to translate that to non-lawyer speak, because Joel is very involved in this. If you get sued in landlord and tenant court, which can happen, if you submit a tenant petition, and I would recommend that people do that, then it blocks, with what he calls a Drayton stay, the suit in landlord and tenant court. So if you want to go to landlord and tenant, OAH with a tenant petition, that blocks legal action on the part of equity in this case.
So that was less legalese than what Joel was saying?
I always think Harry's a lawyer, and then he has to remind me he's not a lawyer. But let me also just say about the court precedents that has discouraged some folks from challenging a rent concession, rent increase. I personally believe that I don't have any evidence in terms of case decisions, but I do believe that there's enough discussion going on legislatively and informally about changes that would need to be made to the regulations to believe that the concession cases are becoming so much more numerous and the rent concession amounts are involving so much larger amounts of money, meaning the difference between the rent charge and what OTA would call a de facto rent ceiling, and this is all about violations of the council's rent ceiling abolition law, that judges are going to start being more receptive to these cases. So I would actually encourage people to file tenant petitions and hopefully see them through.
And the Tenants Association can help you, and the OTA can help you too. Alex?
I have a bone to pick with people who talk about the glorious advantages of filing a tenant petition.
Alex.
When you do file a tenant petition, you will be disputing with the landlord, but they will not take off that huge increase they put on. Okay, and furthermore, OTA can take forever. Now, our tenant association had a tenant petition against our landlord, about which Joel knows a great deal, and we spent 10.5 years before we got a judgment. 10.5 years for tenant petition. Now, maybe it's a little faster.
But you won.
We won in the end, absolutely. But should this kind of process take that long? And furthermore, when you're being hit with a gigantic rent increase, like $1,000 a month, you cannot take that monkey off your back when you go through these legislative processes. Oh, no, you've got to wait your day in court, which may be 1 or 2 or 3 years, whatever. Or if you go to landlord's court, you can put the money into escrow, possibly, but you still have to pay it out. So the monkey does not come off your back from a practical point of view.
And Joel, finally, is that correct? Does he have the?
I do think so. The case is, I think the 10 years is smooth.
That's a record, certainly.
Okay, that's so.
But several years is typical.
But I will say, I do think it still takes too long. But that OAH is getting through cases a little bit more expeditiously.
There's another question: is why aren't we suing through the consumer protection law? Aren't tenants consumers? Why must we go through petty court instead of suing them in superior court on the basis of what do you want to say? You can say it.
You're wondering why shouldn't we be able to sue using the consumer protection law?
And I think that Joel pointed out to us that there's just a precedent that seems poorly reasoned, and it's stuck. So that maybe the landlord succeeded in getting the courts to rule that way, but now we're blocked when, for all intents and purposes, we're consumers suffering a bait and switch, a consumer protection violation. Why can't we sue on that behalf?
So the legislature makes the laws, and why don't we change the laws? Don't I have some...
I think Councilmember Shea was a co-sponsor, co-introducer of the Rental Housing Consumer Protection Act in the previous council session, which would have reinstated...
It didn't go anywhere. Now, my understanding, I don't teach property. I teach constitutional law and criminal procedure. Maybe criminal procedure is applicable here, but my understanding is that the law takes two different paths, and with respect to tenant things, it's in the property area, and with respect to consumer protection stuff, it's more like in the contract area, and there's always been a big divide in the law as a result of that, so it's just kind of historical happenstance, but that doesn't mean we can't change it, right?
It should be reintroduced.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to get on that.
That's why you want all of us to come down and show our faces to the other council members, right?
You know what? It's being on the council, I find it, it's wonderful, and I've been able to do great things, and I'm very happy, but you never know who's talking from the outside to a council member, okay? Who's helping out a council member in some election way? I mean, it's always a mystery to me, but I do know that these large entities have a lot of influence with some council members, and so if we do introduce that bill again, one of the things I might do is to try to see who I can get signed on ahead of time to kind of make them committed. Now, that doesn't always make you vote for something, and just forgive me, I have to tell this one story. When I was first on the council and I learned about, I was given this like bizarro committee about which I knew nothing, including it had insurance and banking and all that. I was like, ooh. But I found out about payday lending. Do you all know what that is? Okay. And I thought, I'm ending that, okay? So I decided that optically it would look great, since we had no payday lenders in Ward 3 anyway, but it would look great. I went over to Councilmember Barry and I said, look, you know, why don't you and I co-introduce this? Ward 3 and Ward 8, we'll join hands and we'll co-introduce this. In any case, a whole lot of things happened. At the end of the day, and I think there were just 12 of us on the council at the time, there was one vacancy, but my law passed, and there's no payday lending in the District of Columbia as a result of that statute. But the vote was 11-1. Do you know who voted against it? Mr. Barry. So getting somebody on your bill, it's a good thing, but it's not a sure thing. But, you know, there are ways we can try to test the waters and see who might support this. I don't know. And there might be significant ramifications, which, you know, once they're fleshed out, might make some members pause. But, you know, so we'll just go ahead and see what happens. Okay.
I'd like to get some more personal stories in this woman here.
Yes, really personal stories. Now, there was the marriage business, but...
Yes, my name's Wendy Tiefenbacher. I'm from the Kennedy Warren down the street and part of the Kennedy Warren Residents Association. And we can actually one-up Alex because we've had tenant petitions lingering in OAH for 15 years. So that's something that you might want to think about, that they have to be forced to not wait until people just move away or die. 15 years we've been waiting. And another thing with the Office of Administrative Hearings is, even though they say you can go in as a pro se tenant, you really can't. You start spending a lot of money on lawyers, if you can even find lawyers that will, you know, work for tenant associations. And nothing seemed to work. And honestly, I think all of us who are still fighting our landlord, who in effect did, he tried to get out of rent control. It's a rent-controlled building. And he's in effect done it by going through every loophole imaginable through the law firm of Richard Lux. But the reality is we probably should have just gone to Superior Court initially. OAH does not really want to hear these cases. Tenant petitions just linger for years and years and years. So I would truly recommend, I mean, what's happening with the concessions is terrible, but, you know, working with you to change the law and figuring out something other than tenant petitions, I think, might work. Again, 15 years and we still don't have any decisions, so it hasn't helped us.
Let me just say, and I don't want to go too long about this, I'm a little bit more optimistic about tenant petitions for the reason Joel says is there's going to be a pileup of tenant petitions. If everyone here or a number submit tenant petitions, it's going to change the dynamic.
We had over 300. We have over, you know,
individual or on one?
Individual and with our tenant association. None of it worked.
Okay, then we should talk for strategy.
So, and I don't want to make it, it's been a difficult, I'm talking just about the rent concession issue. It's been a difficult proposition in court thus far. And I don't want to make it sound as though I'm predicting that suddenly he's my opposition. I'm just saying that you don't have a definitive precedent set by the Rental Housing Commission. OH does not set precedent. And I just don't believe that the argument is being made by law. But any tenant who wants to file a tenant petition and go through that process should do so eyes wide open in terms of, yeah, it might take a while, it might be frustrating, et cetera. But what I'm saying is I think if there's a change in the way of the land in terms of the prospects,
and when we say it takes a long time, we mean even if you win, they're going to appeal it, and then it will go back and forth.
Exactly.
Yeah. So just to point out, the lawyer that you're fighting, this is Greenstein, DeLorme, and Lux?
Yes.
That's the lawyer we're fighting to. And I think that they're very influential in this town. The other thing I'd like to come back to, sure. The other thing that I'd like to bring up, and which hasn't come up in the conversation yet, is those forms that were on the table that you've all received that says your rent is X. And in fact, if you look at the top line, it says $3,500, which you know is not your rent, correct? How many people have gotten those forms with a very high number? It looks official, right? Doesn't it look like it's from the city? It says up top the city address. It says on the left, it actually says Smith Property Holdings, right? It's a little confusing. In fact, the building every month submits a list of those numbers on the top in like a spreadsheet, say called a RAD9 sheet, and submits it to the city with all those false numbers on it. In this case, in this building, it's about 50 of them a month because it's divided by the total apartments. The city takes those, and I went down there and talked to them specifically, and this is the Rental Accommodations Division. They take the paper and they stick it in a box, cardboard box. It's not a PDF, doesn't go to a database or anything at this point, although they're trying to work with that. And then the next year, in this case, Equity Residential, takes that number and gives it back to you in the form of that form, which you think has been checked by the city or it's got the city's stamp on it. But it's not the city. It's just Equity Residential. But does anyone want to say anything about that? Did you get the form? Did you have that experience?
Or something else?
I just wanted to share a personal experience about the concession issue. I can't walk and I only have the use of one hand. So I can't really move physically. So when I was looking for an apartment, I was looking for somewhere where I could live for the rest of my life. And far from telling me that the concession would change every year or that the rent increases would go based on this higher number, when I tried to move in last year, April, they said, this concession will work for what you need because we'll always give you a concession at this level, and because you're disabled, we'll never raise your rent above 2%, and you won't have to worry about it. That hasn't really worked out. And I live in fear that it'll continue to not work out because I know I can't really move.
Now, that is really, really hard to hear, but I particularly appreciate you standing up in this case, making your point, because I haven't heard your story before, and that's something that's terrible.
You ought to get this gentleman.
Yeah. Okay. And can I say, so we're talking about that's a consumer protection issue, because the rent and the...
what happens in...
the future years when you get a rent increase was basically falsely advertised and falsely presented to you when you went to talk about your lease options. So, but I do think that short of the, Councilmember Che has a working group working on the legislation, and short of the full-blown Rental Housing Consumer Protection Act, there's a provision or two that could be put into the bill that would begin to address some of those consumer protection issues, like the truthful advertising in terms of the amount of rent that you're actually responsible for now and when the concession goes away.
Can I also add something? The chairman of the housing committee is Anita Bonds, and I thought I saw Anita Bonds, one of her people here. And since I'm not even on the committee, the way this works is when a bill is introduced, then they'll have a hearing, and then the committee chair will schedule a markup. And at that markup, based upon what was heard at the hearing and whatever additional research or what have you is done, there are often changes in the bill before it's voted out to go to the council. And so it would be important now to work with Councilmember Bonds' office to think about what we could, I'll use this expression, lard onto this bill that, you know, would be otherwise helpful. So you've heard one suggestion already, and, you know, maybe we could do this by stealth, okay? Megan, are you making a note of this? So we'll try to work with your office and make some suggestions, okay?
Hold on, Brian. Let me give some more people a chance.
Has to go through housing.
Yeah.
And then, committee, right?
Yeah, the committee. I'm not on it.
And Councilmember Bonds is planning to come. She was detained, but she hopes still to make it. In the white baseball cap.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on some of the thoughts on the concession. I do agree that I think concessions should be just eliminated. And maybe there is a stipulation for certain very specific times that a concession might be useful. But in my experience, my concession is somewhere around $1,400 a month. When you sign your lease, if you read the fine print where it talks about that concession, if the lease is terminated or violated in any way, shape, or form, they go back to that original amount, which for me is $3,500 a month. So there are many reasons that people terminate leases and violate leases that are sometimes very nitpicky and not that much of a big deal. To have to eat $3,500 a month because you violated a very minor subset of a lease, or have to move for many different reasons, you're not protected by a military clause or any other clause that allows you to vacate a lease, I think that is very concerning. There's also another sheet that you sign that is not connected to your lease, that you are signing away your right, because it is a separate piece of paper that says, I understand this concession, I understand this is a concession in kind, and as a marketing ploy, basically, I could read the language, but it says, this is a concession for the marketability of this unit. I understand this is a concession. I understand if I violate or terminate the lease, I am giving up my right to this concession. I can give you a copy of that. Everybody here, I believe, has signed it, and it's a true concern. And then the last point I wanted to make is rent. That piece of paper that has been circulating around says my current rent is $3,500 a month. That is not what I write a check for. That is not what they wire from my bank account every single month. We need to define rent. Rent needs to be defined as the amount that is paid to the landlord not that the amount that they wish was paid to them. So that's all I have to say. Thanks.
And I should say that that is the first part of Councilmember Che's bill, and defining that rent is rent. So I think that that's going to address a major part of that. Councilmember Anita Bonds is coming in. She is the chairwoman of the Housing Committee, so the most important person in helping to move Councilmember Che's bill. Come on in. She's been nice enough to meet with us already. Thank you. Yeah. So she's up on this issue, and we're going to give her a chance to.
Well, should we give her the list of what we want? Like now?
Now.
I'm going to give her just a second to settle in before we ask her to speak. But I know that Jeff had a question. If you could keep it short, then we'll go to Councilmember Bonds.
Okay. Jeff Schmidt here, W406. Evidently, this proposed bill eliminating the concessions keeps running into a technical roadblock, which Mary Che outlined at the very beginning, which is the so-called kind landlord. There has to be some provision in it in case you have a non-corporate landlord who actually wants to do you a favor and give you a concession for a good reason. So I have a solution to that problem, which is that we simply define the rent paid as the average of the 11 months of greatest payment during the last year. That way a landlord could give a tenant up to 1 month free rent without lowering the amount registered with the government. Do you understand that? You look at the last 12 months of rent paid and you average the highest 11 of them, and that number is registered with the government as the rent on the apartment. So that means that the landlord could offer 1 month free rent, maybe as an incentive to move in or for kindness or whatever, and the landlord wouldn't suffer a decrease in the rent registered with the government.
Okay.
Another way of putting that is that the temporarily reduced rent has to be actually reduced from what was paid in the past. So it doesn't include these concession leases, which also are temporarily reduced rent, right, from the $3,600.
So Gabe is a member of the board, and he's an attorney. He's been working on this legislation with Joel, with Councilmember Che's staff, and with Councilmember Bond's staff, who's been advising as well. So he knows what he's talking about, and he think he can also answer questions on this issue. Yes.
I did negotiate down. I negotiated down to only a $10 increase, which, considering all the stuff that had happened, really, I don't think I should have paid any more. But I was not given any time to actually read what I was signing. I was told you have to sign this now or you will not get this. So I probably did sign that piece of paper that the other gentleman was speaking about, but I was not allowed to read over the document if I wanted that minimal increase.
They don't allow you to negotiate any of the terms anyway. They don't even have a mechanism for doing that.
On the question about language, we also have language in emails that have gone back and forth with Equity and tenants. I think, I don't know if Katie's here tonight, but a few people have this language, and the language says specifically that the rent, this top number, $3,500, is required by the city, and it's the number the city makes them put in. And that, if you check your emails, you may find that. So it's not just like they leave out the details. They tell you specifically something that's incorrect. So we have information showing that. Yes.
Hi, I'm Mary Ellen Wiggins. I live down the road at the Cleveland House, which is another equity property. And I certainly have had similar experiences to what people have talked about here. But one thing I noticed is when I moved in, I was given so much literature about lead paint. I feel like I know a ton about lead paint, which is very important. But it seems like it would be really helpful to also know about rent control or renter's rights or have some other really similar plain language documents that just explain to people in a standard way what their rights are, what this means, and what they're entitled to, and let people know that up front, perhaps as a companion to any bizarre documents that you may also wind up signing.
Joe?
So, there's such a thing as the opposite of that advocate that presents Mentors 101 presentation. So, and we do go to buildings upon request, and if the tenant association wants to request that, I can pass that on to our chief tenant advocate. I'm sure it will be no problem at all. But so, you're talking about something beyond a rent concession issue, just a general
just
presentation.
About, we didn't know our permit was rent control, so sure. What that is, what it means, would be enormously helpful for everyone up front.
I hope everybody has the tenant bill of rights, which is now required to be attached to your lease.
By the way, I put all that lead stuff in there.
And I think that she, in fact, is pro-lead language in there. But the fact is, and I know this, that there's pages and pages in this that they give you, and then there's some small print that you may not read, which tells you what you really need to know. Right.
Well, you know, I didn't prescribe every word, and sometimes there is this tendency to make things obscure by overload. But in any event, the idea was that you should have full disclosure of the unit and any lead issues.
Tyler Bond. I live in the West building here. My story is a lot like pretty much everyone else's here. My wife and I moved in here a little over a year ago. You know, up until the day we signed the lease, we had never heard anything about the concession. When we asked them about it when we were signing our lease, they said, oh, don't worry about that. That's just a number we have to report to the city. Your actual rent is this. You know, this was the first time we'd ever lived in a rent-controlled building. So we said, okay, we signed the lease. Didn't even think anything else of it. You know, it comes up. It's about time for our lease to be renewed again. We get the same mystery letter in the mail that everyone else got that said our rent was actually $1,200 more than what we were paying each month. So we, you know, sent a pretty innocent email inquiring about it. Now, we were fortunate. They actually didn't really end up fighting us on it, and we paid a very small rent increase. That's actually less than 2% than what we were paying. We have other friends, some who are still in this building, who are paying about 7 or 8% more than what they were paying last year. We have other friends who actually are moving out of this building because Equity was very hostile in negotiating with them over the rent increase. Like I said, we were fortunate. One thing I would say, I mean, about your proposal you were discussing earlier about, you know, passing a bill that says, okay, at a certain date, the rent is this, and you can't report this higher number. I think you should probably make it very specific that at that date, it has to be the number that people are actually paying and not the date that they're reporting to the city. Because I can see that being a loophole that they would exploit. Like if you say, okay, it's June 1st of 2017, whatever the rent is that day is the rent you can pay. My concern is that Equity would say, okay, well, he's supposed to be paying $3,600 a month, so that's his rent.
No, that's right. It would be the actual rent paid.
But I think that would have to be clearly spelled out. Because I've read, after going through this experience, I read through everything that Equity sent us, and whether they're violating the letter of the law, they're definitely violating the spirit of the law. And so I think any legislation has to be as specific as possible to cut out their loopholes.
Can I just sort of, well, firstly, good evening, everyone, and thank you so very much for expressing your opinion about rent control. This is such an important subject for us, and I'm not trying to take away from my colleagues' time, but I just really feel that we must say something about this. When you look at this form, which is the document in question, it does say current rent charged is. Well, we don't want to know about current charge. We want to know about current paid. What are you really paying? And so one of the remedies, in my opinion, would be to change that line so that it reflects what you are actually paying. Now, you probably have already said this before I got here. But that's one way.
No, actually.
That's one way to do this.
Actually, we just talked about you.
No, you did not. But seriously, I think that would be one of the remedies that we need. And I mean, this document, it does definitely imply that it is a government document. And as such, I think it needs to be more specific, more descriptive of what it is designed to do, so that, you know, tenants across the city understand it a little better. Because if the way it reads, it could, and it does, it's very misleading. And rent charge is one area. Then the issue about what that really means and what the adjustment. So I hope this is just one side of the page. There's another side to it, right?
The other side is a letter that goes with it, but that's the important part.
Okay. So that would be one of the things that we're hoping will be aired when we have an opportunity to examine the law a little closer. I'm sure that my staff, if Barry Weiss had an opportunity to talk, he would also say, we are also hopeful we'll be able to make rent for rent control units at CPI and not include the automatic 2%, so that we begin to be more realistic about what is happening in our economy and with the people that live here. So that's another, you know, part of sort of a subset of this. As we begin to try to equalize the community so that all of us can continue to live here, tenants as well as owners. So just wanted to put that on the table. I know you're going to have some opinions on that. And also, when a unit becomes vacant, no longer are we interested in 10%, 30% increase in rent for that unit. You know, we're not interested in that. There'll be a fight. You'll hear about it, because I'm sure landlords that in Washington, D.C. are very familiar with doing very well. And if you're a landlord here, I apologize for hurting your feelings, but you've been doing pretty well. And if you're not doing well, you can always propose and apply for a hardship petition, which would require those who live in your building to indicate that there is some issue, that you are deserving of that, and that there are need for the repairs. So we're trying to look at the rent control law of 1985 from a holistic approach, but we understand that we have to do it in increments. And there's a great deal of thanks to my colleague, Councilmember Shea, for pointing out this little part of rent control where the bait and switch is very apparent. So I just wanted to share that with you. I know it's getting late, so I won't
deliver more. We'll try to expedite, and you can, we normally go an hour or an hour and 10 minutes, but we want to make sure that you've heard everything you need to hear, but I also realize that your time is valuable, so we don't want to push it.
Somebody could get us a NAT score, that would be good.
Yeah.
What's it?
What's it?
Dark 30
and NATS.
Yeah.
So I'd like to follow up with two things. One is to make it clear that Councilmember Bonds has introduced a bill that does what she just said. So there are two bills that are both very helpful on this, and just to be clear, that's moving forward. The second, I want to follow up with what she said about this form, and she knows from our conversations that I hate this form too. How many people, when you got this form, did you think that it was an official city form? How many people thought that? And when you saw the number at the top, did you think that the city was telling you that that's what your rent is? How many people thought that? So you were, I have to say, you were fooled by that, right? But not your fault, because that's what it looks like. So that's what we have. So the other question, and we have a gentleman in the back who has a question, so I want to go to him next, and then a woman here. As you know, the rent increase this year that's possible is 2%, plus the CPI, which is only 2%, because the CPI is zero. So if you got a rent increase recently, your total rent increase, what you paid last year, plus 2%, should be a small number. So it's $1,800, for example, that should have been $36 increase. So how many people, if you've done the math, how many people had a rent increase that was over 2%? Right? That's just about everybody. How many people do you know it's over 5%, for example? Okay, a lot of people. How many people over 8%? Do you know the numbers? How many people over 10%? How many people over 12%? Still hands up. How many people over 15%? I'll go to Pat here. Pat is over 62, and she still has her hand up. You want to say something briefly, and then we'll go to the gentleman in the back?
Sure. I had a very similar experience. I was told it was a rent control apartment. I didn't see the number until I signed the lease. I was told that, don't worry, it'll be the same next year, not a problem. And when I got my letter, it was $945 above what I was paying. I walked into the rental office and I said, excuse me, this letter says $945 what I'm paying. And the rental agent said, yeah, which meant to me that until I said, I'm not going to pay it, were they going to negotiate. And several people, especially if you're not familiar with apartments or whatever, would be stuck paying it. Every year I get an increase that's pretty high. Last year was 35% increase would have been if on the higher number. And I'm, again, eligible for the senior exemption. This year it's 22%. And what they do is they try to force you to sign a lease, which is not legal, obviously. But even with this year, if I sign a lease, that they're proposing a 6% increase over what I'm currently paying. Which adds up over here.
Okay,
we have
a question in the back, gentlemen.
Right here.
Dave's
going to
run the microphone.
Hi, my name is Jacob Bonatowski. I live in West 819. I just had a really quick comment about what this gentleman was talking about. This is going into my third year living here at Equity. The first year, it actually was a sub, I believe, 2% increase for our rental. And then, so that even like lulled us into a bit of a false sense of security, where the next year, as of this year, we had about a 6% increase in rent. So they have many different tactics to keep you, like, you know, signing up for the lease and that kind of thing. And it just, like, I was looking back at the history of the leases that I did, and it just seems really misleading exactly how they do all that. So I just wanted to mention that real quick.
Woman in the green turtleneck here.
Hi, my name is Naomi Gerdage. I live in the south side here. So I have a couple of comments, but to get into that, I need to tell you a little bit about my story. So I've been here, this is on my second year. On my first year, I had about a 15 to 20% increase. The problem initially was obviously I wasn't going to pay that, but they were very unresponsive into my emailing coming by the office, to the point where the only reason I was actually able to sign another lease here, but for a different apartment, was that I happened to walk into the office whenever my leasing officer was there. So I would like to propose something that makes it so that they have to respond to us, because it literally took them over 3 months to get to me about my rent, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. So leading into that process, by the time I got to them, I had a month left on my lease, And so I wasn't going to be able to pay that 15 to 20% increase. And the only option at that point, other than paying that, was that I could switch apartments and get a secondary lease with the new higher rent with the concession, but still keep it within manageable level. So I was forced into moving apartments for my second year here. So that's sort of part one of my story. My suggestion to you as far as actually getting the actual rent that we pay here would be to require that they submit the leasing offers that we have to sign at the beginning of our lease. That would give you guys the information, such as the amount that they say that they are charging us to the city, along with the concession, because on our leases that we sign, that concession is on there. We do see that. We just don't see the bottom line. So I think that would be helpful in your endeavor into actually getting physical hard documents that say this is how much we are actually paying. And you could even corroborate that with the leases that we could submit to you anonymously and say these are about the actual rent that we are saying, as opposed to having equity and other residential facilities say that, hey, we're actually charging him this ridiculous $3,000 a month. So suggestion there as well. So that's it. So thank you.
Let me just answer that and say that they already have to submit a form, and the form is a RAD-9, which is like a spreadsheet. They already have to do it. The trick here is the city doesn't check the form, so they put it in a box. Now, if I were the person, say even an intern who's taking those numbers in, I would look at it and say, oh, $3,500 for rent, $3,400 Van Ness, $3,200 Van Ness, $3,000 Van Ness. And I would say to myself, could someone possibly be paying $3,000 for a one bedroom in Van Ness? Or I'd look at the spreadsheet and I would just average the numbers and say the average rent in Van Ness is 28 or 32 or something, and I would know that they're false. But the city's not doing that. And I don't know why that is, but that's a major part of the problem, is the city doesn't check those numbers. And they just come back from the landlord who hasn't done that. Tiffany, sorry, did you have anything to say? Or are we gonna go to Tiffany?
I think from the meeting that we had last week, it's pretty clear we also need to figure out how we can do what I call landlord police. We almost need that. We need a process where we can enforce what the law is and make sure that our tenants are not gouged. And so we're trying to come up with some language. I'm sure that we're going to get some additional input. I can't tell you how rewarding it is for me tonight to hear from you directly these issues. Surely they've been going on for a while, and not just here, probably in many properties. And so I said to Harry, I said, when we need a class action suit as it relates to consumers, and maybe we need to rope in all of the, I think we now call them property providers, so that those that provide and have rent control units, so we can have a closer look at what's really going on. It sounds to me that what is going on is any way to just get a few more dollars in the pot and yet still the providers seldom have what they call a contingency fund. You know, something that they set aside when they really need to spruce up or make necessary maintenance changes in the property or on the property. So we're trying to hear it all and do, again, what we can, but we know that it will be in increments. I do not believe that my colleagues are ready to do a massive overhaul and have and sign on to an omnibus, you know, rent control revision. But, you know, we might look at it and see. We need 7 votes. We have 2 here. We just need a few more.
So I'd like to have one additional question because we're running late. I'm going to go to Tiffany in a second because she's been waiting. And Harry, you're going to have to wait just a second because Tiffany's up next. And if you can keep it really short because Harry's a longtime resident, we'll give him a chance to. But in any case, I just wanted to make sure that you all heard what Councilmember Bonds is saying, is that these bills are going to move through her committee. And there's going to be a hearing on Tuesday, this Tuesday, at 10 a.m. So if you can come, it's very important for... Did I say Tuesday? Wednesday. Okay, it's Wednesday, 10 a.m. It's very important for people to go. That's right. That would be smart. I'm going to be there. Gabe's going to be there. Anyone who can be there, it's helpful. But the other thing about that is, and Barry pointed this out to me, I didn't realize that, but if you have a story to tell that you didn't get out tonight, write it down in short form, and we can submit that to the committee so other committee members who didn't have a chance to be here tonight can see and hear from you. So I'm going to go very quickly to Tiffany and Harry. We're going to wrap up, and then I want to give the council members a chance if they have something that they'd like to say to wrap up. But Tiffany?
My name is Tiffany Guglielmetti. I live in the South Building for 3 more days because I am moving out this weekend, and my money's not going to Bethesda, but it is going to Maryland. And this is the end of my second year. As everyone else has reported, I didn't hear anything about a concession until I signed the lease. I'd already given a deposit. I'm in there signing the paperwork to get my keys. When they first tell you about the concession, I specifically asked them at that point what happens next year when I go to renew. And they told me, don't worry about it, we'll give you another concession, it's not going to be a problem. And the first year wasn't too bad. We had had one of these tenants association meetings first, so I knew how to negotiate with them and things to say. And I went from 1576 to 1632, which was right at 3.5% for 2015, and did not have to sign a new lease, so it was month to month. But when it came to this year, they've really dug their heels in. It was a 22% increase for me to stay month to month, or their final offer was 7% if I wanted to sign a new lease. And then the next day after I submitted my notice to vacate, the rent that was on the website was considerably lower than that final amount that they offered. And the unit has been rented, and from what I can tell from the last date it was on the website, it went for $12 more than what I'm paying currently. So I'll be leaving, but I hope that you guys do make some progress on this, and good luck to everybody who's still here.
Okay, Harry Herman, if you could be very brief, because we're adding one more question here, and then we're going to...
I just wanted to make one conclusion and help sum this up. You've heard stories of all the people here, and there's no uniformity. There's no consistency. If this is to be rent control, then it seems to me that there should be a uniformity. There shouldn't be one tenant with the same apartment paying this because they were able to talk better to the landlord than another tenant who wasn't able to talk to the tenant and is paying several hundred dollars more. And so I think that anything you do has to really talk about uniformity. You can't have the same apartments in a rent control building renting for different amounts of money.
I think I saw some nodding heads here. So I'd like to close, as you know, that we normally have an hour, but we've had 2 special guests today, which is very difficult to get the time of 2 council members on one night to come out. So this has been extraordinary, and we really appreciate your time. Really, really appreciate your time. So I would like to give both Councilmember Che and Bonds a second if they'd like to say anything else or if you feel like you've heard what you need to hear.
I really feel strongly that we've heard a lot. We're willing to hear more, of course, but not tonight. We understand that. because it is late, and we don't want to keep you. Councilmember Shea and I will stay until the cows come home, so to speak.
Nope.
If we have to. Well, almost. But seriously, this is a very important issue. It's something that we really want to find solutions for now, not, you know, 5 years from now or 10 years from now. We're working on some solutions now, and we will continue to do that. We have that commitment from me. I am very hopeful that I will continue to have the Committee on Housing and Community Development. That's my hope, and I believe it will be. And that gives us opportunity to make many adjustments that I feel need to be made for the people of the District of Columbia. So that's where my head is. And my commitment is definitely to you. And thank you for being a resident of the District of Columbia. And when I can, I'm going to try to persuade you for ownership so I can have your property taxes so we can bring more people, you know, into the District of Columbia. But thank you all very, very much. And I hope you got to meet Kimmy and Barry from my team. Yes. All right. Kimmy, raise your hand. Kimmy is brand new. Recent graduate from George Washington University. One of their stars. And so I'm really delighted to have her join us. So thank you all very much.
Thank you all for coming. I really am benefited by hearing your actual stories because even though I'm not on the committee, I sometimes wander into hearings and make my voice known. And also I have some, Megan Brown is here from my office and she's been taking notes. We're benefited by the suggestions that you've made, and we will be offering some additional changes, you know, in the bill. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And go Nats. Okay, good night.
Go Nats.